Good evening, everyone. I think we can see that there are some of us in Southern Europe and some of us not. Because I hear that in Portugal, from what all I've heard, that it's beautiful, hot, sunny, you can go to the beach. It's been fairly nice here in Paris, but it's still cold. And I don't know what it's like. It looks like farther north is cold, and I don't know with Mark, but it's spring, but
It's even colder. It's like just 3 or 4 centigrades, just above zero. So it is not very spring-like today, at least.
So. And yet here we are, all of us together. And if we ask, sometimes I come back to this kind of basic question of who is this Dharma for, or who is this teaching for? In today's world, because it's a very different world than when Buddhist teachings first started coming to the West. And it was all very exotic. There were we practitioners had used a lot of the traditional forms, and the teachers were not native to the countries in which they taught. And it was a different time with revolution in the air and counterculture, hippies, all of that. The world is very different today. And we're several generations past that. Not only in terms of the Buddhist teachings, and teachers, when the first Buddhist teachers came to the West, I was not even born. And here I am, holding the lineage here. So sometimes I say, okay, so what is this Dharma here and now? And how I always come back to the essence of, how can we realize the same truth that the Buddha discovered so many centuries ago? Because that truth doesn't change. All of the circumstances and the forms, the languages, the individual people, that changes. But the truth of what the Buddha was telling us does not change. And we know that when we experience it. That's why we say, if you sometimes in the Zen texts, they say, if you break through the barrier, you will see eye to eye with the ancestors and see what they saw or something. And that's true. Because the content may change, but the nature does not change. So what will help us today to benefit from that, these ancient teachings, and how do we bring it into our lives? That's basically what Wildflower is about and what our practice is about. And if we're stuck on labels and forms, then it's all abstract and we're stuck on mental constructs. And that takes us a step away from our experience. Why am I thinking about this today? I don't know really. Um, Because I guess, as always, when I look around and see this world, such a crazy place. And see what looking inside and looking outside is the quote that I like to say often of when you look inside and see that you're nothing, that's wisdom. When you look outside and see you're everything, that's love. So sometimes when I look outside and I think, oh boy, you know, am I Donald Trump? You know, the person at the supermarket who is butting in front of everyone or something. And if I think that I am Donald Trump, then I'm missing the point. I'm missing what that really means. I'm missing what the truth of what the Buddha was telling us. So I come back inside and I say, okay, so I have nothing. I am nothing. There is nothing. Sometimes we say, if there's no prison, there's no prisoner. So, and the prison is all of my concepts and my ideas, the who I think I am, what I think my position is, who I think I am not. So I'm not Donald Trump. The power that my relationships with others and the world and places is. That's my prison, actually. All of my concepts and my ideas about myself. And there's very much a prisoner there. This is kind of an extreme term, prison and prisoner, but we do feel that way sometimes. We feel stuck, or we don't, you know, we feel like so separate and helpless. You know, just to take the story of Donald Trump and how frustrating it can be to see how when someone is not held accountable for their actions, and then is brought to be accountable and somehow probably will wiggle out of it and turn the whole thing around, that's really frustrating. But if I look at it not from my usual way of looking at it, you know, my concepts and my ideas, and think of it as not two, you know, this famous Zen thing, not to. Nothing separate, nothing is excluded. Donald Trump is living in his own mind, which is hellish, which is nothing but separation and ignorance and delusion. I know what that is. I mean, he will manage to stay out of prison probably, but he's in prison in his own being. It's not like I'm happy about that. If I start being happy thinking, oh, he's in a living hell, well, then there's something wrong with that's missing the point. The point is just that there are consequences. There are things do happen according to our actions. And it doesn't make me feel better to know that Donald Trump suffers, but it does change the way that I'm clinging to my idea about what should happen to him and how he should be and how the world should be. So I can look at, okay, what am I clinging to? When I feel something like that, you know, when I feel frustration and disappointment and disgust, whatever it is I'm feeling. So what is it that I'm clinging to? That's a good question. Just like, who is this Dharma for? Or what is this Dharma? You know, what am I clinging to? I know my teacher's teacher and Marek's teacher used to say, the question is not, am I stuck? The question is, where am I stuck? So it's not, am I clinging to something? It's, what am I clinging to? And surprisingly enough, when we ask that question, it kind of opens things a little bit. It sheds some light. And we can say, okay, what is it, you know, what is clinging? Because that's the basic, our basic problem is clinging. As the Buddha pointed out, that was his first point. What am I clinging, you know, what is clinging? And then, well, what am I clinging to? Am I clinging to my idea about myself, about someone else? Am I clinging to how I want things to be? Am I clinging to a place? Am I clinging to an activity that I'm doing and I don't want to be interrupted? Or am I clinging to a projection of where I would like to be instead of where I am? Am I clinging to how I looked 40 years ago, how I felt yesterday? Am I clinging to winter or spring? It's vast. The potential clings are unlimited. You know, we say it, we chant it in our four vows. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Well, how do we put an end to them? Well, it's not like we think. If we're thinking in terms of beginning and end, then we're clinging to a result. If we're thinking in terms of not two, not separation, this one, seeing through this one delusion is seeing through all delusions. This one delusion about clinging to myself, an idea of myself, we could say maybe, because who we really are has nothing to do about with who we think we are, actually, nothing at all. The two, it's like functioning on different planes or something. Who we think we are has to do with our concept, our conceptual thinking mind. Who we really are has to do with like the empty blue sky, no obstacles, no separations. Landscape covered in snow or something. And the conceptual level. That's what we call our ignorance or our delusion, covers up the who we truly are, covers up this the natural order of mind, the natural state of freedom. We think that so the thinking mind creates this prison, and the prisoner. But when we can see through that, see through the prison, then we see that there's no prisoner. As I said. So I can be a prisoner of my ideas about Donald Trump and the state of democracy. It doesn't mean that none of that exists. It doesn't mean that. We know full well that that exists, that there's danger all over the place, whether it's the climate crisis or the economy or the state of democracy in Poland, Hungary, where else? But, you know, we can cite almost everywhere. The United States, Ukraine, everywhere. But how we experience that changes. And then how we experience it changes us. And then that changes how we move in the world. I know I say the same stuff every talk. I'm sorry to repeat myself, but there isn't really anything else to say. I was thinking about this koan in the Blue Cliff record about the Heikigen Roku, where it's kind of a long koan, but there's a teacher, Gensha, who comes before the assembly and says, Zen teachers everywhere say, I think it's something like, touch beings and save them. And then he says, so imagine that three kinds of invalids come to you. How would you treat them? And he continues, the blind invalid can't see. Even if you know, wave your stick in front of them. The deaf invalid can't hear, even if you speak wonderful, beautiful Dharma talks. And the mute invalid can't speak, even if you give them all the possibility to express themselves. How will you treat them? This teacher asks, and he says, you know, if you can't treat them, then, you know, it's the usual thing of then the teachings of the Buddha are worthless, or the miraculous possibilities of the Buddha's words are worthless or something. So there was a monk who heard this and then went later to another teacher, to Uman, and said, ask him about this. And Uman said to him, you, make a bow. So he does. The monk makes a bow and stood back up. And Uman took his stick and poked him. And the monk pushed back, stepped back. And then Uman said, so you're not blind. Because he saw the stick, you know, you're not blind. And he told the monk to come closer. So the monk did. And Uman said, oh, so you're not deaf. And then Uman said, have you understood? And the monk said, no, I haven't. And Uman said, so you are not dumb, you are not mute. Then, of course, with that, the monk realized something. But what's interesting about this, I mean, of course, there's a lot of material here. It's really interesting. But for us, so when he says, touch beings and save them, and how will you treat these three people who come? He could have expanded it greatly, you know? He could have said, he could have named every person in the room. Because each is individual. He could have named all the possible circumstances of teaching. As we know, the Buddha adapted his teaching to his audience, to whoever was there, to the questions that were asked, to the level of the practice, to the community in which he arrived, whatever. Always speaking to the moment, responding to the situation. And so Gensha is saying something like this. And the monk doesn't get it. And so then he goes and repeats that and asks someone else about it. And Uman responds, pointing out to him that he's asking this theoretical question, but he's not blind. He's not deaf. He's not dumb. So why is he even asking that question? In his circumstances, none of that applies. So that's why I started out with this. So in our circumstances today, you know, a lot of the archaic Tibetan jargon and practice and things doesn't apply to us at all. So why are we even asking questions about, you know, how we should, you know, what does this deity mean and how should we ring this bell? You know, doesn't apply. I know Geno Roshi told us that for several, I think 2 years, they did regular angos in Poland. Like for 3 months, they would stay in Poland. And maybe Marek was there, I don't know. And at one of these angos, a Japanese monk came there, not Maizumi Roshi, but someone from Japan came and stayed for a week or 10 days or something. And at one point they said to him, they were very proud of their forms and how they were doing things. And Maizumi Roshi taught them all these forms and everything. And the retreat was at Sosnovka, you know, it was a like ski resort or something, you know, it wasn't a Zen temple officially. But it was like kind of like a hotel, you know, it had big rooms and there were rooms for people to stay and a kitchen and room. And it was in the mountains. And so at one point they asked this monk, they said, so, you know, what do you think? Can you give us any suggestions about how we should do this ceremony or about the form? You know, should we arrange the altar differently or something? And he kind of sighed and said, you're doing it perfectly. It's all wrong. Meaning, he explained that it was nothing like it would have been in Japan, in a Japanese monastery or temple. It could not be, because those temples and those monasteries were built specifically for certain characteristics. And it wasn't just a ski resort that was being taken over for 3 months and the dining room made into a zendo, you know. But he said, you're doing it perfectly. And said, just do it like you're doing it. And so if we try to, you know, give, we have a koan that is, how do you stop the sound of a distant temple bell? Well, if you give that koan to a deaf person, that's really not appropriate, right? Or, I don't know, if we had one about candlelight being blown out or something, and you gave that to a blind person, well, that's not really appropriate. These are just kind of light examples. But the whole point is, here and now, like I started out saying, here and now, what is this Dharma and how do we do it? How do we experience it? What path do we take? Well, this is it. We're on that path right here and now. And we just respond to the situation and find that truth that is the same truth as the Buddha found, but in a completely different way. The Buddha's practice looked nothing like a Japanese monastery. We don't really know what it looked like, although we've heard plenty of stories and we can imagine studying historically what India and Nepal were like at that time, but looked nothing like this. Looked nothing like this. Of course, Zoom didn't exist. But 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when I created Wildflower, Zoom didn't exist either 20 years ago. So we did something else. We just respond to the situation. And we get imprisoned by our ideas and our concepts. And then we can't freely respond and move in the world. And freely treat people appropriately. So like Genshe's thing of how do you treat these people? If you don't know, then the Buddha's teaching is worthless, as we always say. And Uman's teaching was actually pretty good because he was just asking the monk to respond to the situation. So that he's saying to the monk, you know, make a bow. So he hears that and he bows. He reaches with his staff. He moves back. He shows him that the monk himself is just responding to the situation. He doesn't get it until the end, although it says, I think it says he realized he had a bit of realization. I'm not sure it's like great realization like some of these koans, but so he realized something. Call and response or something. Just responding to the situation. So that's what was coming up for me tonight as I looked at all of you. And seeing, so, you know, like I said about the, what is our Dharma? What is this Dharma now? What am I clinging to? You know, it's so close. It's so close that we can't see it. But we can ask ourselves those questions. Or I know there's another teacher in our lineage, in Maizumi Roshi's lineage, who I read, he said, whenever, in order to come directly into harmony with what is, or something like that, he always used to say to himself, remind himself not to. That's why I was thinking it was that, not to. Whenever doubt would arise, he would say, not to. And he even wrote that on a piece of paper and put it on his computer. Not to. To remind himself of not separation, of not excluding, including everything. So that's, that's the Zen joke of how many Zen masters does it take to put in a light bulb? Not two. Which is similar to the one about the pizza, you know, like what kind of pizza does a Zen master order? Or we could say a Zen student. One with everything. No? And the same thing, one with everything and not two are the same. I suppose you could say, yeah, how many pizzas does the Zen master order? Not two. So I open it up to you all. We heard the one, now let's hear the not two. Ready.
Good night, everyone. It's a nice joke with the pizza, but practically, I think it would be very disgusting to have a pizza with everything, pineapple, pepper. You have to be very brave to have this kind of pizza.
And thank you, everybody, for the words of sympathy that you give me these days, to Lisa, to Emmy, to Deb today, and to everybody really that is with me during this difficult times after my old cat has passed away. It really means a lot, and it helped both me and her to be able to be with you and sit together through it. Still waiting to plan some to cremate her body, and I don't know if there will be an opportunity to share a Zoom link with you for this cremation or not, but I will see how it goes. I don't know. I thought when I read the letter from Emmy, and I realized today, I remember her, that we shared interest in art, but I didn't know we had so much in common with cats. And you know, it came to my mind, I wonder if you would be, you know, interested in making some smaller ceremony for either for this cat that has died, or for the cats that we have in Sangha and that we lost, and maybe around the time that she was going to be created. You don't have to answer now unless you feel to, but it came to my mind just when I read your letter, so I thought maybe it's a good time to share with you this idea. I hope it's not too wild for wildflower.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I was touched. I was deeply touched, as I told you in my message, when I heard that she had died, especially because I know what that is to lose a cat. And no, it's not too wild. Nothing's too wild for wildflower, actually. But we have to, you know, we do include, when we do ceremonies for the dead, which we do occasionally, we are like Freddie's saying, for all sentient beings, I always include my cat on that list. And I and my husband, we did, and another friend who was here around that time, we did chant the Enmei Juko Kanengyo and do a dedication for her when she died. And we sprinkled her ashes. She also was cremated, and we sprinkled them in the garden, in our garden, because it's really her garden. Now it belongs to my other two cats, but it was her garden. So it's a possibility. It's really difficult to do ceremonies online. That's why we
do
them. But when we have our retreat, I mean, you could, maybe Debbie could, when they do the retreat this weekend, if they do a ceremony, you could add his cat to the list for the, you know.
Okay.
And when we do one in Portugal, we'll probably have a list of people who died, and so we can add her to that too. Being who died.
She was the whole her life in the shadow of her sister, of the Torti that she lived with, and just the last months of her life that she was alive, that she became like the princess of this world, and that she could enjoy the interest of the people, including the people in distant places over the internet, like you. And she was also very, very shy when I met her. So she was from the family of the cat that live in the wild. So she was very much afraid of people, and she was also the weakest of the six six kittens and more most frightened. So when she was brought to my home, she spent first 2 weeks, she spent in the closet, and she went out only when I was meditating. So, and somehow through all her life, the most she felt more at ease when I was sitting in meditation. So, when she started first to see to come to me and sit on my knee when I was meditating, and then actually she, then just 2 days ago actually she died on my knee when I was you know basically meditating the whole night. So she got more and more comfortable, and she always laughed. It was, I can share with you the secret that it's difficult to keep a mudra when you have two cats on your knees. It's just, there is no room for the proper mudra. So this is the only complication that I, actually, I feel very strange now that I can keep my hands in mudra again. And it actually, I can tell you, it doesn't feel good at all. So it some imperfections are really good, but turns out that we are losing them sometimes. So that because she was so, it was like these stories of that touch us, like about people that are underprivileged. So she was like this. So maybe that's why I make so much of an effort to advertise to everybody about her, how great she was now. So somehow, and thank you for you know, listening to me and to those stories.
Thank you, Mark.
And about this. Usual and unusual cat at the same time.
Maha, can you tell me, spell her name?
Charnusha, it means blacky. In it's a Polish for you know, just blacky. So she was so underprivileged that she didn't even have a proper name. She was just called just blacky. Or sometimes I call her Manjushri because that's how I thought about her, the Manjushri incarnated. So for me, it was her and Charnusha. Yeah. Charnusha, it's Charna means, this man's blacky. Charnusha, it's like a more polite form of the same word. So it basically means the black cat.
Thank you. Anyone else want to share something? Questions, comments? Lisa?
Yeah, hello. I was just thinking when you were talking about how did you say it? where what am I clinging to? Mm-hmm. And it just I had just hung up previously with talking to my mother about, I mean, she went to the countryside and forgot the car keys, and the car is over there. And for some reason, I got mad at her She's 80 years old. I think she's sort of starting to lose her memory, and she can't hear properly anymore, which is very frustrating, and for her, I'm sure, as well. And when I heard you, I said, but why did I get mad? What was I clinging to? So it's just, what was I clinging to in order to get mad at something? And she was just, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't need it. You know, I'm going there for the weekend. So I'll bring the keys on Saturday and it's fine. And so I don't need it. And anyway, so it's a very good question to keep asking. What am I clinging to? And when, at all times, actually, at all times, not just when something like in the, I get mad at or something. It's not mad, but I was like, whoa. So anyway, just to say, good question.
Yeah, very good question.
Can you please translate the words cleaning to me? Sorry, I'm...
Lisa or Anna?
En français, ce
c'est... Apego.
Agarrar.
Thank you.
How would it be in French, Roshi?
À quoi je suis attaché ou je m'accroche à quoi?
I was thinking it was the word, but I was not sure so many times spoke about. Thank you for.
Yeah. Claudia.
Hello, everybody. It's kind of funny that you talk about that tonight, because I spent the whole day very frustrated with some, I mean, with a shooting I had yesterday. And I was supposed to collaborate with like a DOP, and I was very, very mad at him because I really didn't like, I don't know why I trust him. So I arrived on the set and I understood right away he was going to do something I didn't like. So I was kind of, so I closed myself. And so I decided everything because I saw he was not going to do what I wanted. So I was very directive, can I say that? But very, and that's funny because it's, so now I have the result of was the shot what we have done, and it's really, I think it's really bad because I was so, I don't know, I was, it's all what you said tonight, like I didn't let it go, I was like right away I was closed in something and I couldn't let it go, I don't know why. And so I really recognized everything that you said. And I don't remember because you kept on saying something tonight, but now I don't have the words anymore, but you said, you, when you say do with the situation, you don't say do, you say another word. Respond to the situation, wow. Okay, because you repeated tonight a lot of time and respond to the situation, okay. That's exactly what I didn't. I don't know why I was not. I don't know why I couldn't do that on that moment. I don't know why. And okay, so I closed that. And just something about cats, just because you're talking about that. Just to tell you, Amy, that I see Nala every morning. And that's funny because this morning it was kind of it's like to see you. I saw you this morning because I saw Nala. So that was kind of, I was surprised myself because I was kind of very happy with Nala, and we have like a little love affair, both of us. And it's very funny. And when I see her, I'm so happy. It's like a very nice moment. Okay, so that was a little parenthèse. And just last thing, I was very touched because when you ask like, is it not too wild for a wildflower if we do like a ceremony for the cat? And I would like to invite all of us, all of you in my parents' house, because I remember when I was like, so I was seven and my father sold, I don't know if I can say that without crying, but when my father sold my dog, so my best friend, he was my best friend, he was the same height than me. So I came back at home and he had sold the dog because the dog was not good at à la chasse. I don't know how you say that in English.
Hunting.
And I was punished because I was crying. So I was so desperate of that situation. I can remember that. And my father couldn't understand what were my feelings. So I think I should invite you, all of you. maybe my father could understand maybe something.
I have a question. Which one is Nala? I can't remember. The black and white or the gray one?
Oh, the gray one. The gray one. I was going to say, so I have two cats that the Sangha gave me, actually. And I live, my house and the Zen Center of Ginnaroshi are right next door. And so my cats go in the garden next door as well, to the Zen Center garden. And especially Nala, who is a very beautiful, royal, kind of regal cat. Very sociable and probably has a love affair with everyone there. I don't know, maybe not, but and she visits regularly next door. Whereas the other one is much like Marek's cat. She was abandoned, a wild street cat, kittens that were saved, and is afraid of everything and everyone, and very different personality. So that's just who Nala is.
Yeah, Cinderella, I say sometimes also, or there is a Shudra in the Hindu tradition that is the lowest caste, that there are four castes, and that the lowest caste that is supposed to serve everybody is the Shudra. So I was mocking her and referring to her as my Shudra. And but she was, you know, always perfectly okay with the lowest position that she could take, and she was okay there, and it took her 10 years to realize how great it is to be able to sit on my labs. And now after these 10 years, which turned out to be a half of her life, then for the second half of her life, she was running to be first on the labs when she realized how great it is. And then she she becomes so open, so trusting that you wouldn't believe her. For the last few months, she didn't allow me to carry her in a cage that we usually carry cats, but I had to carry her under my jacket, so she was always putting her head from under my clothes to amusement of everybody, because usually the cats are carried transporter. But she wanted to be closer to people for the rest of her life. So she still there is a work for me to put the stories about her. But I know there are a lot of stories in me, and sorry they are not better organized, but thank you for being able to share them with you.
Thank you. So anyone else? Claudia also might have mentioned when she was using a terminology DOP, that's director of photography. I don't know if anyone, she was shooting, so film. It's not like shooting with guns or something.
So how old are the cat you talk about? You are just around 2 years old, those two cats that
they just turned 2 years old, yeah.
So they must have very lively now and very joyful. I can imagine. Must be great to be around them. And it resonates with me to what you said, that they don't replace the old cat that has died. So it's for me the same. Of course, those stories, those cats that I can see in your places, that they don't replace my loss, but this is some kind of consolation, and it's nice to see those great animals around and to hear about them.
Well, and it's the same as with anything we lose, other loved ones or jobs or whatever.
And perhaps it's a good thing that they don't replace the new ones, that they don't replace, but because it means that we really love those ones that we lost, and also that every affection is different, so we can like to people, we can love many times in our lives, but each time it's different, and it's never exactly the same. So with
back to the question of what am I clinging to, if I want, if I'm thinking I'm replacing it, then I'm clinging to something that's very different than appreciating or clinging and appreciation are very different. I think we're about out of time, unless someone has one last thing. Claudia, yeah?
But I think that the fact I was shooting, because today I have the result of my behavior. And I'm facing the result of my behavior, and I really, it reminds me. I mean, I think that if I didn't have the image of the video of that, I wouldn't even. I think I took conscience of that because I had the video in front of me, and it's bad. And I think it's a good reminder for me, like hey, that's because I came back home very happy. I was very happy. I had imposed him what I wanted, my vision. And I was like, wow, I did very well, you know. But now when I see the image, I can see it's not. Something is wrong. So it's okay. I'm happy that this exists because I think I would have missed the point. I would have
Okay, thank you everyone. I think we need to stop.